Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show. Welcome to another edition of Your Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me this afternoon. Let's begin by telling you discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, the station, its staff members, or underwriters. And welcome to the 243rd edition of Money Matters, entitled The End of 2016. End of the year. Money matters is about money, as money does matter, and matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, and some way or another controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money or lack of it or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, it's about you. Well, thanks a lot for those that supported Turkey Matters for Thanksgiving. One more time. Funds raised from the public, $1,670. $1,670 matched. $1,670 total amount raised for the food banks, $3,340. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's never too late to donate to your local food bank, of course. So, Dow never really stuck over 20,000, did it? Never stuck over 20,000. It's trying. Dow's at 19,862, up 70. And quite a bit of news items out. As I mentioned before, these large numbers, 17,000, 18,000, 19,000, 20,000, are big numbers on the Dow. And their support and resistance levels that some analysts look like or look at. And usually when they assault one of these, they try to get over a big number like 19,000 or 20,000. They try a couple of times and then either give up the ghost and go back down or go over the big number and it's off to the next big number. And so it did go over 20,000, I think, briefly. A couple days passed, maybe. Now it's trying again, 19,862. So the Federal Reserve came out yesterday, and the expectations were for an interest rate increase, and we got it. They went from 0.25-0.5% to 0.5% to 0.75. So you guess you could say they raised it a quarter of a point. Was expected by those that look and prognosticate such things. And market reacted negatively yesterday on the announcement, down 100 and something. And fixed income again got hit. So we're going to talk about fixed income today a little bit. Fixed income, you know, generally thought as things that pay fixed interest rate or dividend payment, perhaps you might look at it that way. Bonds are regarded as fixed income. And some utility stocks, preferred stocks, things of that sort. And those are usually stacked in a conservative portfolio, or more of those are stacked in a conservative portfolio generally. So if you told your advisor you wanted to be conservative, odds are he probably put some fixed income in there, maybe more than the person who said they wanted to be aggressive. But when Trump got elected, starting November 9th, the day after Election Day, fixed income basically got creamed from an asset base that generally doesn't move a lot, at least in relation to equities, stocks, let's say. They were hit rather badly. And so if you had a conservative portfolio, you had a conservative advisor, you likely saw some balances move that didn't make you very happy. And you might have even called and said, hey, I thought I was conservative. Why did I lose, you know, $2,000-$3,000 or whatever in a couple of days, or whatever you might have lost? So we're going to cover that. So here we sit at the end of 2016. With many an event, of course, the Federal Reserve yesterday tossing and turning markets and investors alike. January of this year, 16, saw the Dow drop over 6%. Likely caused by what I called the interest rate insult from the Federal Reserve. Their first interest rate increase was a year ago. The first in about 6-7 years. It was 0.25%, just like it was this December. A whopping 0.25%. The market threw a temper tantrum and slammed the indexes hard through January, if you remember January. Prior to January in August 2015, we saw another Dow whopping, took the Dow out to the woodshed. I think that's when we saw a 1,000-point drop at 9 a.m. in the morning real quick. February, March, April saw a decent recovery, and fixed income generally rose during that time in an unexpected move and lockstep with the market. Normally they move in opposite directions. So this was kind of an interruption of the common dance between the two related assets, which usually move in opposite of each other. Markets meandered along, going from February 1st, right around first week of February, Dow sitting around 15,600 to a June level up about 2,000 points or so. Then the surprise Brexit vote shaved off 600 points or so off the Dow, only to see it rebound to about 18,500, which slowly eroded to a low of about 17,000 and some change until November 9th, when the Don was elected. November 9th gave way to a subsequent 1,200-point Dow rise, taking many by surprise, and of course now it's 2,000-something points since Don was in there. Infrastructure and financials took off, but technology fell. And fixed income surprised many is when Trump appeared the winner, fixed income got creamed. And that took many an advisor and their clients by surprise, as we mentioned. We'll have more about fixed income in a little bit. Needless to say, the Dow's rise was not all chocolate and roses, and although the Dow did scream higher, the rise in equities was selective. Martin Weiss said that only about 5 Dow stocks were responsible for about 2/3 of the gain. Some stocks rose and some fell. Surprisingly, we even saw some fairly big food company stocks fall. Those are normally a bit less volatile, but some of them got hammered. The thinking was for these big companies is that the multinational companies that sell overseas would get hurt by Trump's willingness to put America first, mainly protecting U.S. companies against foreign ones, and that the foreign companies would then retaliate. The rise in interest rates anticipated by a Trump administration would also make the dollar stronger, which would hurt exports. So calling which stocks would rise and which would fall was a fool's game. Indeed, making forensic sense of the stocks that rose and the stocks that fell was elusive. But it did have some semblance of sense once one put together the intricate pieces of the puzzle of why things rose and why things fall. Where we go here is anyone's guess, as usual. But the December Fed meeting, with the little bit slight increase in rates yesterday, had a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction yesterday, down 100-something points. Today, what? Up 70. So, I guess we could say we're in a rising rate environment. But then again, the commitment by the Feds to jack the rates could solidify the market in coming weeks. Hard to tell. No one knows for sure. Our stance in our portfolio was negative to neutral until Trump's election, then we turned slightly positive. You know, first time we did turn positive on the markets for the first time almost a year. We think we're going to wait until the reaction to the Fed's meeting is digested before updating the stance and where we plan to go in 2017. But with the panic in fixed income at least seemingly subsiding for now, it was down yesterday, and today there few of them are up. We still don't know exactly how the markets are going to digest this interest rate increase. Last time they increased it last December, we saw a January sell-off, which is rather brutal. One could try to draw the correlation that the interest rate increase in December actually caused the January sell-off. But sometimes you just don't know with the markets for sure. So, yeah, mom-and-pop investors, conservative investors, and conservative advisors may have received a nasty pre-Christmas present in the form of lower portfolio bounces and balances. We did see balances bounce all around. Some lower portfolio bounces if people held a lot of fixed income. Pre-market indicators of market direction on November 8th. I was watching them. They looked horrific on election day, down 700-800 points on the Dow. But indeed, the next day on the 9th, when the markets actually opened, they took off and barely missed an upbeat. The most commonly watched indicator, of course, the Dow, was a big winner. Climbed steadily and has over the last couple of weeks. Over 19,000 for the first time ever and breached 20,000, although it's below that today. Hasn't stuck there yet. The month-end close of over 19,000 was significant an indicator to some technical analysts, and indeed an obvious indicator to many that the Trump rally, at least for now, was for real and may be continuing. Not all stocks rose in value, however, as I mentioned before. As is the case with market rallies, they can be deceptive. The Dow can rise and a lot of stocks can still go down. A handful of sectors reacted in the opposite direction of each other, and some sectors fell with relatively shocking speed. Technology sold off hard, while defense and infrastructure stocks soared. Where the conservative advisor and a conservative investor likely got hammered is in the fixed income markets, as I said before. Fixed income refers to things like corporate bonds, treasuries, muni bonds, some utility holdings, preferred stocks, and just about anything else that pays a fixed interest rate or perceived as paying a fixed interest rate. This area of investment is generally thought of as a more stable way to play the markets due to their fixed promise to pay out income in the form of dividends or interest. And many conservative investors have been told these types of investments are less volatile than traditional stock holdings. As such, conservative advisors, older investors, conservative investors, and those with less risk tolerance usually hold a large percentage of fixed income in their portfolios. Fast forward to the Trump rally and a wake-up call, at least of sorts, is how markets can operate, shocked many an investor, and indeed probably shocked many advisors. With a sudden spike in interest rates in November, which continued during the following weeks, fixed income assets basically got creamed. From CBC News, Bank of Montreal economist Benjamin Reitz said 2 weeks back the price on the 30-year Treasury bonds fell nearly 5% on the Wednesday preceding the article, erasing 2 full years of coupon payments. That means that as the index 30-year Treasury bonds fell, it fell to the point where you got wiped out of 2 years' worth of interest. The November 14th article went on to say, quote, the bond market is supposed to be a dull, boring, stable place, said Colin Lundgren, head of U.S. fixed income at Columbia Threadneedle Investments. Instead, it's been at the center of the storm, and I would agree with that. The real news has been the bouncing around of the bond market and all these fixed income investments. I would say bouncing is an understatement. Across the board, fixed income continue to bleed red in an uncharacteristic free fall that likely put a dent in conservative portfolios, likely causing many a phone call to advisors everywhere asking by their clients to explain just what the heck happened. You know, what happened? What happened to holdings that were thought to be somewhat immune to such sell-offs? Luckily for fixed income investors, the nature of how fixed income works may be self-correcting. As the price of a fixed income security drops, and this is how they work, their yields rise. So investors buying at distressed prices will get higher yields as prices continue to fall. This type of teeter-totter of prices drop, yields go up, can entice new buyers into a falling market, and at some point, yields just get too juicy for new investors to resist. This is not to say prices of fixed income can't keep falling. They can. No one knows just when prices on fixed income might stabilize. But for now, the steep plunge witnessed seems to have at least slowed. But indeed, the damage to many portfolios has been done. Apparently, the market perceived a Trump presidency as one which will let rates rise. That perception, probably spurred on by a comment Trump himself indicated when he said during the first presidential debate, bubbles of record low interest rates from the Fed, the country's economy is in a big, fat, ugly bubble. So again, what he said, because of record low interest rates from the Fed, the country's economy is in a big, fat, ugly bubble. From that, one might draw the conclusion, and the markets apparently did, that Trump believes low rates are a scourge to the economy that should be corrected, which means allowing rates to rise. When rates rise, fixed income goes in the opposite direction, and for now, that direction is causing angst for many an investor. As in most drastic market movements, however, selling into a panic is a practice that should be carefully analyzed before undertaking. Sometimes the markets overreact and throw babies out with the proverbial bathwater. Patience may be the order of the day. We'll be right back with Money Matters.
Give it! Give it to me!
And you're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name's Mark. Thanks for joining me today. So, some news out from David Henry out of Reuters today, which is interesting. The article goes on to say, just as mortgage bankers were preparing for an end of the historic boom driven by low interest rates, he's referring to the real estate boom, bankers have begun knocking at their doors. Borrowers have begun knocking at the doors of banks again. In an earnings report last week, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup said they originated $94 billion worth of new mortgages during the second quarter in their core mortgage operations, an increase of $23 billion or 31% over the first quarter. What do you know? Article goes on to say, what's the reason for the sudden burst of business? Well, mortgage rates have dropped to lows not seen since 2013. And they continue to remain, even though we saw a 0.25% increase yesterday. They continue to remain at historic levels, low levels. New borrowers have been enticed by low borrowing costs again and loan down payment offers. Does that sound familiar? This, with mortgage rates near historic lows, not as low as they go. I think I saw the fixed rate on 34-something. Banks are predicting now the trend of borrowers knocking on the doors will continue, which is providing a bright spot in a low-rate environment, which basically hammers banking results. But they're making more home loans. More money to be made by the financials. We thought, so says Mr. Weinbach on the article. He says, we thought the refinance market was going to shrink sharply. Mike Weinbach, chief executive of mortgage banking in J.P. Morgan. We've seen a market that has been much bigger than expected. All this may be cold comfort to big U.S. lenders that desperately need rates to rise for broader and profits to improve, but generally thought financials make more money when rates are a little higher. Why that is because low rates do bring in new mortgage business and deliver fees from refinancing. Banks are hard-pressed to generate substantial income when rates go too low. Adding to the pressure on margins, U.S. banks' cost of funding is also risen. The difference between what the banks pay for U.S. dollars and the Federal Reserve's expected policy interest rates on Friday hit its widest since the August of 2012. So rates on short and long-term debt, known as the yield curve, have come closer together. What this means is that basically the banks are able to make some home loans because they're basically starving for business. And Wells, J.P. Morgan, and Citigroup each talked in their reports about low rates as the main hurdle for them to make more money. Second quarter profits for Wells, J.P. Morgan, and Citigroup fell respectively 3.5%, 1%, and 14% from a year earlier. So we'll see. Banks are back into the mortgage business. I guess the question would be, is how many of these mortgages are they going to sell off to the feds? And feds, you know, do backstop a wide variety of mortgage business. Yes, they do. Dow up 69, gold down $32. Gold been hammered rather mercilessly. And crude oil sitting at 52.05. That is today, of course, December 15th, 2016. And so gold definitely has taken a drubbing in the last... since Trump, down 32 today. And so, if portfolio movements, you know, with the Dow making a new high, I know a lot of investors would think that their balances should be going up. But because as we saw this wide variety of asset rotation, I guess if you were in defense and infrastructure only, you probably would have mirrored the Dow's rise. But of course, nobody's just in, usually not just two assets, and a lot of people hold this fixed income stuff. So although the Dow may have been pushed higher by half a dozen stocks per the Martin Weiss article, if you held fixed income because you were kind of conservative, you probably saw balances go into the red, maybe. So if red balances, you know, investing is generally thought of as a long-term strategy. You're going to get ups and downs. And as we said in our portfolios, we were basically neutral to negative on the market in the last year or so for the articles that we were approved to put out. We finally turned positive when Trump was elected. But we're still being careful. The reason we're being careful because we want to make sure that the market is not going to react post-interest rate increase from the Feds. But that being said, investors always are willing to take risk in the markets, but some say they're willing to take risk, but then when they see the balances go down a couple of percentage points, they get nervous. So there are strategies or options for investors to participate in up markets without risking loss or red numbers. There are strategies for that. Other strategies can guarantee an investor won't outlive their money, and still other options cover concerns such as estate protection, long-term care, and catastrophic illness. Today, there are contracts which bind insurance companies to guarantee your principal against loss, yet they allow you to possibly participate if the market goes up. There are other strategies which also guarantees your principal and guarantees you get income payments for the rest of your life. You can never outlive your money. So there's strategies out there for people that don't want to see red numbers, but still participate in up markets. There are strategies out there for that. Now, generally, these strategies won't participate as much in an up market. So they're not going to be, if the market goes up 20%, maybe these strategies won't go up 20%. But at least if the market goes down, as long as the insurance company writing the contract stays solvent, the principal is protected. And some of these things give you a minimum interest rate to boot. There are tie-up periods on some of these products. Not supposed to sell them. You got to tie them up for a couple of years. Some products allow you to withdraw a certain amount without penalty, certain amount every year. And there are many other terms and conditions, of course, so you got to know them all before buying one of these things. But having the principal guaranteed that still have the potential to participate in market rallies can be an alternative into stocks that can lose value and an alternative into fixed income, as you just saw. Or in savings or CDs, which may not keep up with inflation, should we see inflation take off. These products are usually thought of to be bought by younger investors, but they, you know, you're allowed to buy them all the way up to age 80. But you should have very careful discussions with an advisor if you're 80 and you plan on buying one of these things due to suitability. But generally, accumulative products such as these are considered more appropriate for a little bit younger investors. What's younger? I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50? Not 80, 90, 100. You can put some of these products in an IRA or not in an IRA. If you don't put them in an IRA, some of these tax advantages can be lost. So there's a lot of things to consider. Consulting with a tax professional as well as an advisor. Make sure you use each one of these things accordingly. Certain times these things can have tax advantages. Feds of the state may give you a tax break. Others guarantee a minimum increase in principal, as well as the market participation in up markets, as we mentioned before, when markets rise or if markets rise. Then, of course, there are products that can cover the value of your estate in case you get hit by a truck. They can protect you against potential negative events such as estate taxes, long-term or critical care costs. There's all sorts of stuff out there. For whatever you want to transfer your risk to, you know, when you take a insurance policy, let's see, on your life, you don't eliminate the risk. You transfer the risk to somebody else, risk transfer. Of course, anything you buy, you got to make sure that you understand what it is. So you got to consult with the person's moving the product, and you have to consult with tax accountant. It's always a good thing. I always recommend a CPA myself. Many investors don't know that there are products out there that won't show a red balance, but you have zero downside risk, yet upside potential is possible. They're there. Many variations are available, and believe you, these companies want you to buy these things. because they make money off you. You know, they wouldn't sell them if they didn't make money off you, but you're transferring the risk of downside market movement to them. Yet they still let you partially participate in upside movements. Traditional portfolio holdings may suit most investors, stocks, bonds, fixed income, and the rest. But there are available for people that just don't like to see red numbers on their statements for any length of time. And you can use all your portfolio or part of your portfolio can be considered for a wide variety of these products. You can mix and match them to suit your needs and your individual situation. There are many things to consider. Some of these things do have withdrawal, early withdrawal fees, penalties, and other considerations. So I guess the bottom line is caveat emptor, right? Buyer beware. Know what you're buying. Usually the guarantees on most of these products are not through the U.S. government, but through the claim-paying individual companies. You know, there's these big insurance companies and the rest. So can't really say that your investment is guaranteed by the U.S. government. It's guaranteed by the insurance companies. So, yeah. Talk to your advisor about it. There are stuff out there for people that don't like red. You're listening to Money Matters, and my name's Mark. Phone number is 530-265-9555, 530-265-9555, if you're listening to the show live. And we'll be right back with a little bit more stuff on the markets.
Sunday's passing by, I'll be working here forever, at least until I die. Damn if you do, damn if you don't. I'm supposed to get a raise next week, you know damn well I won't. Working for a living, work. Working for a living, work. Working for a living, never had a working. I'm taking what they're giving, cause I'm working for a living. Cause I really need to work. But hitting up my buddies got me feeling like a jerk. $100 condo, $200 rent. I get a check on Friday, but it's already spent. Working for a living, work. Working for a living. Working for a living, living and a working. I'm taking what they're giving, cause I'm working for a living.
Seen Huey Lewis many times walk around Mill Valley. Lives down there. Went to high school down there myself. Used to see Huey Lewis go walking by. I remember last time I saw him was in was at Pete's Coffee in Mill Valley. It must have been like 10 years ago. There's a short guy walking by with his wrinkled face. There was Huey. Strolling on by. And any case. So yeah, gold has been hammered. Down 32 today. And out from Market Watch today, Mark DeCambre has detailed Peter Schiff with an article came out today, December 15th, 11:40 a.m. Of course, you may be listening to the show at a different day. not an earlier day, because I'm doing the show today, but sometimes it's rebroadcast. So Mark DeCambre, in his MarketWatch article, says the gold bug, he refers to Peter Schiff, says the stock market has it all wrong. And housing could be the first warning sign. Interesting how that correlates to the article we read earlier, huh? Gold is off nearly 11.4% since the November 8th election. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, so says Mark DeCambre, is clambering toward 20,000. A major milestone, says Mr. DeCambre, for the blue chip gauge as Wall Street grows euphoric over assets considered risky. But this isn't the stock market Peter Schiff envisioned when he started scooping up metals and mining shares amid repeated warnings of hard times ahead for equity markets. Peter Schiff, we have interviewed Peter on the show many years ago. The chief executive of Euro-Pacific Capital and a well-known longtime gold bug and market pundit who often espouses what critics describe as a bearish outlook for the equity market is seeing his gold investments get bludgeoned since Donald Trump beat Hillary in the race for the White House over a month ago. For example, Schiff's Barrick Gold Corporation, his investment is off 17% since November 8th, so says the article. Newmont down 14%. More broadly, the exchange-traded VanEck Vector's gold mining ETF and Spider Gold Trust have both retreated sharply. Out again in this article by Mark DeCambre on MarketWatch. Gold prices are off 17% since their 2016 peak of around $1,367 an ounce in July. What do they sit today? $1,131. What's that down? $230? $240? These moves came as the Dow Industrials climbed 8.6% since the election and more than 14.3% year to date. And the S&P 500 has booked a 6% advance since Trump's election win and an 11% gain in 2016. The article goes on to say, is Peter Schiff lamenting his appetite for gold and nearing tears over the stock market's record rally? Not quite. After all, Schiff apparently voted for Trump, even if he says he cast his ballot as a way to thumb his nose at the establishment candidates like Clinton. It was more of a vote against Hillary. Peter Schiff told MarketWatch of his vote. He typically throws his support behind libertarian candidates, but viewed GOP candidate Trump as a better in-your-face to the establishment, unquote. Currently, Schiff says Wall Street is suffering from irrational exuberance. You might recognize that term, first uttered by Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan back in the late 1990s. Which described a tech-inspired rally in stocks during the so-called dot-com bubble. Remember that rally? Of course. Made millions, then you lost millions, right? Peter Schiff says in this article, the market has got this thing all wrong. So far, the rallies for equities has been inspired by pro-business proposals from Trump, including tax cuts and looser regulations that are expected to stimulate economic growth and jack up inflation, which has been stubbornly low for years. Those combined factors, higher rates and inflation, already have hammered bond prices. Hammered bond prices, fixed income, right? We talked about that. Pushing yields to their highest level since 2014, and when yields spike, prices go down. Peter Schiff, in this article, written by Mark DeCambre, continues to argue that investors are misunderstanding the effect that higher rates and increased expectations for inflation will have on the economy. His case is fairly straightforward, says Mr. DeCambre, who wrote this article. Higher rates reduce the value of already inflated stock levels, even when factoring reduction in taxes. Plus, creeping interest rates are likely to serve as a drag on the corners of the market that have enjoyed ultra-low rates, which may include home sales and auto loans. Schiff goes on to say a spike in interest rates could slow down the supply-demand dynamic in the housing market, pitch prices lower, and in turn impair the value of assets that banks tend to hold on their balance sheets. There you go. Schiff went on to say, just look at the housing market. Look at the auto market. These big sectors have been made possible by cheap money, and you can't take it away without some serious losses being exposed. He was referring to the growth in subprime auto lending, which we've covered on this show many times. There's a huge swath of subprime auto loans. Basically, if you have a pulse. The article refers to 6 million Americans are delinquent with auto loans, and it's going to get worse on a Market Watch story entitled, Some 6 Million Americans Are Delinquent with Auto Loans, and it's going to get worse. That apparently came out on November 30th, 2016. Indeed, the article goes on to say, rising interest rates have already resulted in some $6.5 billion in unrealized losses on the values of securities on bank balance sheets. Well, you wouldn't know that by looking at the financial stock index since the Trump election, right? However, banks aren't sweating this escalation just yet. Wells Fargo CEO Tim Sloan recently said higher interest rates are an overall positive for stocks. The focus on the pros of a climb in interest rates is why financial shares, as measured by the Financial Select Sector SPDR ETF, have surged 19% since the election, representing the best performing sector among the S&P 500's 11 sectors. Federal Reserve's decision on Wednesday to raise interest rates for the first time in 12 months, of course, we found out about it Thursday, and a more aggressive outlook for future rate hikes added to bank gains because their business models benefit from higher rates. We covered that before. Indeed, some bank stocks are again up today. Schiff is known for his prescient calls ahead of the 2008 financial crisis, where he was actually scoffed on CNBC. He saw a global economic crisis in mortgages brewing, however, most did not. However, his what they call a perpetual polemic against the inability of the Federal Reserve to effectively manage monetary policy and a rose-colored view on the benefits of gold have drawn him criticism. Schiff says the market ought to show more caution than is currently on display. So, what is the shape of Schiff's portfolio really in? Well, and the article says he didn't offer specific returns, but said that detractors riding high on Schadenfreude. I don't know what that is. It's in the article. It looks like a German word. Maybe I should know. As his gold stakes slide, need to also factor in that gold is higher on the year, up 9.3%. Investments like the Van Echter's gold miners are more than double their value since the start of the year, so says the article. Energy picks, certain energy picks they've referenced here, are up higher on the year, and they have helped hold the pain of other losses, apparently. But to be sure, so says the article, Schiff says, some of his bets are still well off their best levels from 5 and 6 years ago. As for his market outlook in the article, Peter Schiff sees the market performing similarly to the transition of President Bill Clinton and George W. Bush. Schiff went on to say, I suffered the last 4 years of Clinton, but killed it during the first 7 years of Bush, and I'm ready for that to happen again with Trump. He said that he's betting against an expected increase in spending similar to Bush's effort in 2000 will play out. That from Mark DeCambray, specifically Ask Newswires at DowJones.com out on MarketWatch. So you just really can't tell. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name's Mark. Thanks for joining me. And you can always send comments to the show to the program director at your particular station. Oh, look at that. There we go. And they'll usually pass them on to me. So the Dow's sitting around 19,859. And Dow's up 66 almost at the close. It's 12:53:32 Pacific Standard Time, July Thursday, December 15th, 2016. I don't know what I'm thinking about July. And we'll be back on the air January. I think the first week of January is the next show. Website, moneymanagementradio.com. Newsletter there, no cost. Our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. We don't spam your email or anything like that. Moneymanagementradio.com. And, of course, your community radio station is always looking for volunteer support and other means of support. And I'm sure you can contact your community radio station to help further the message, to make sure that the news is disseminated and there's great music that most of these community radio stations have, stuff you won't hear on the top 40 stations, and alternative news, market news, and all sorts of crazy stuff. We have energy shows here, and yeah, just some really great programming on community radio stations that you can't see on commercial radio stations. So my name is Mark. You have been listening to the 243rd edition of Money Matters, the end of 2016. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Money Matters is about money, and it's about you. Please remember that discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. It's been my pleasure. And stay tuned for other fine programming. Community radio station, big thanks goes out to all the listeners and supporters of community radio stations everywhere. My name's Mark. I managed to make it through the show with a little bit of the grippe that's been floating around. So I brought a new strain of the grippe into the station. But since you're listening to on a speaker, I can't infect you. Well, what can I say? God bless. Have a great day.